Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Thursday, January 28, 2016. Sudan reopens its border with South Sudan after 5 years of political standoff.
We are suffering also from their instability. We are hosting now more than 1 million coming from there and living here in Sudan. If stability comes, everything can be smooth, everything can be normalized.
And the Minister of Finance makes promises to South Sudanese who are struggling to put food on the table.
We have taken the steps to reduce these high prices through trying to still maintain some subsidies on essential food items, especially food stuff like cereals and beans, sugar, and also on fuel.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Sudanese President Omar Hassan al-Bashir has opened the border between his country and South Sudan, according to the state-owned Sudan News Agency. A Sudanese official says it is an attempt to normalize relations between the two countries. For VOA News, Ayen Bior reports from Washington.
The border between Sudan and South Sudan has been closed since 2011, when South Sudan gained its independence from Sudan. Sudanese Information Minister Ahmed Bilal says the decision to open the borders is the final part of a three-part deal reached this week. Bilal says the first step was President Bashir's decision to lower South Sudan's oil transport fee earlier this week. Bilal says the next step was led by President Salva Kiir.
The second step was taken by Salva Kiir, the president of the South, who declared the withdrawal of 5 kilometers between the borders. And this is actually one of the agreements 5 years ago that there should be an area between the two countries. Both of our armies and their armies should withdraw from it.
Bilal says opening the borders is the most critical part of the decisions between the two countries to try to normalize relations. He says both parties agreed to stop supporting rebels in each other's countries. Bilal says Khartoum informed Juba that it will stop supporting Riek Machar and the SPLM in opposition, while South Sudan has agreed to stop supporting the SPLM-N, a rebel group in Sudan.
We think in these very favorable conditions, if it continues like that, then the normalization of the relation between the South and Sudan will be the next step, which we all desire for that. And this is if we take it in consideration with the agreement between the rebels in the South and the government and Salva Kiir and that the formation of the new government. All these steps can lead to some sort of stabilization, political stability in the South.
Bilal says it has been difficult for traders in Sudan to do business in South Sudan, but opening up the border should alleviate some of that difficulty.
Because we are suffering also from their instability. We are hosting now more than 1 million coming from there and living here in Sudan. This actually is a big burden on our shoulders. So if stability comes, everything can be smooth, everything can be normalized.
A brief online statement also says Mr. Bashir has directed all parties to adopt all measures for implementing the decision on the ground. Bilal says the withdrawal of troops from both sides will ease military tensions. For VOA News, I'm Ayen Bior in Washington.
One South Sudanese political analyst says the deteriorating economic situation facing South Sudan and Sudan explains the move towards normalizing relations between Juba and Khartoum. Jacob Chol says the opening borders between the two countries will allow traders from Sudan to bring much-needed goods into South Sudan. For VOA News, Philip Thorne-Aleu reports from Juba.
Analyst Jacob Chol says borders between South Sudan and Sudan should have been opened 3 years ago when the cooperation agreement was signed. He says the timing of opening the borders is significant.
The economic crisis is biting both to Sudan, and therefore the reason as to why President Salva Kiir has to ensure that his troop move actually past 8 kilometers to South Sudan is basically to be able to show Sudan that we want to work together. What perhaps prompted Khartoum or President Bashir to be able to do the same thing is the same economic crisis in Sudan.
President Kiir ordered his troops to withdraw 5 miles southward on Monday. Chol says the rapid increase in commodity prices in both countries is negatively affecting the popularity of the leaders in both nations. He says even though Juba and Khartoum accuse each other of harboring rebels, there are mutual benefits in normalizing ties.
The big challenge now on the table is economic viability of the two states. Sudan does not see itself moving forward until it has to normalize trade so that it's able to get trade benefit from South Sudan. And South Sudan sees itself that it's at the brink of collapse because of the economical crisis we are facing at the moment. And therefore, the idea of security issues, the idea of accusation have been put aside because they are not really immediate issues at the moment.
Mawena Makolarik, a spokesman at South Sudan Foreign Affairs Ministry, says the decision to open borders with Sudan was long overdue.
So it's a good news. We have actually raised that issue that the border has to be open for the free movement of goods and people. And we have made it clear that products that are produced in Sudan actually are likely to come to South Sudan if the borders be open, because we are the biggest market for them. So we have made it clear to them that the opening of the border for the free movement of goods should not wait the actual demarcation of the border.
As it says, border demarcation is a process that could take time, and trade ties have to continue. Chol says opening borders with Sudan and cooperating on security issues will also remove suspicion that either Juba or Khartoum supports armed groups against the other.
There will be a lot of impact. The thing is that, as you know, in our agreement on the resolution of South Sudan conflict, you talk about any group that was aligned to any side. The agreement said that they should really be taken away and disarmed and cleared at the borders. And therefore, the South Sudan government sees itself really working toward that.
Chol says it is clear that full implementation of the peace agreement will increase economic benefits for both countries. South Sudan and Sudan borders were officially closed in June 2011, a month before South Sudan declared its independence. For VOA News, I am Philip Thona Leo in Juba.
The government in Juba says it's adopting other economic policies to curb inflation, which began to affect citizens after the central bank devalued South Sudanese pounds last month. Nabil Biagio has more for VOA from the capital.
South Sudan Finance and Economic Planning Minister David Deng Athorbay says the new policies are aimed at curbing inflation and increasing local production of certain goods. But Athorbay says the most urgent task right now is bring down the cost of food, which has skyrocketed in recent weeks.
We have taken the steps to reduce these high prices through trying to still maintain some subsidies on essential food items, because they are the ones that affect people very much, especially food stuff like cereals and beans, sugar, and also on fuel. In the state, we have reduced customs on them by 40%.
Despite the minister's assurances, Jane Abba, a resident of Juba, says the prices are still going up and becoming increasingly unaffordable.
20 liters of water nowadays, before it was 11 pounds, so it has increases to 20 pounds. And the other thing is also sugar over a kilo. Before it was 20, and it has increases to 30 pounds. Even beans also, it has increases, not like before. It is increasing ahead instead. It's not coming down.
Max Morgan is a construction engineer. He says building materials have become so expensive that it's hard for him to find work nowadays.
The thing you normally buy at 1 pound is exceeding times four. Let's say for me, I'm an engineer. Things in construction, people, they are running away. Let's say a bag of cement was on 60 pounds. Right now it's heading to 350.
After the local currency was devalued against the US dollar in mid-December, fuel prices shot up and prices of food items more than doubled. Before the devaluation, the exchange rate for the US dollar was 2.96 South Sudanese pounds. After the devaluation, the rate jumped to a whopping 18.5 South Sudanese pounds. Athorbay says the government is working with its partners on ways to bring in more food to the country.
We have discussed with the rebel advanced team here, the SPLM-IO. Also, I'm discussing with the World Food Program to help us transport our huge quantities of grain from Ring area in northern part of this country to central South Sudan as far south as Juba. This thing is expected to happen soon. We are going to purchase Dura from the stores in Ring, and when that grain comes all the way along the Nile, will be dropped off, and then will reduce prices.
The decline in oil prices has hit South Sudan hard. A barrel of oil used to sell at more than $100. It now sells at less than $30. On top of that, landlocked South Sudan must pay Sudan exorbitant fees to use its pipelines to reach Port Sudan on the Red Sea. Athorbe says the government is trying to counteract the loss in oil profits by making moves in other areas.
This will be done through efficiency. Like, for instance, we have to clean up the payroll all over the country to remove ghost names. Once we have efficiency in our payment system, then the cost will come down. We are zeroing in on certain basic items like reducing foreign travel. Also, we would like to reduce import on non-essential items like vehicles.
Athorbe says the government's long-term strategy is to increase agricultural production.
Already the president has issued and has actually procured 1,000 tractors, which are now going to various states. This will be followed up on our part to make the tractors operational. We are going to provide food. We are going also to provide citizens with conformity or in coordination with the Ministry of Agriculture, seeds. And also, the Ministry of Agriculture is encouraging very much animal traction, plowing, like ox plow and so on. So we are zeroing the next year. Hopefully, next harvest will be a bumper harvest, and this inflation will be history.
But Athorbe says that none of these efforts will make much of a difference if the parties to the conflict fail to achieve lasting peace across South Sudan.
Without peace, we cannot have stability, and then we cannot increase our production.
Sudan has agreed to lower its transit fee for South Sudan's oil, but has not said exactly by how much. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, UNICEF says it needs more than $100 million to help the children of South Sudan. Find out why when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
do you believe in yourself?
Yes, I believe in myself. Because I love myself, I know I can make it.
I do believe in myself, to the fact that I'm convinced that I have potential.
I do believe in myself because I know I have the ability to do many things that I believe I can do.
Oh yes, I really believe in myself. I'm a hard worker. I try as much as possible to be focused in life and to see to it that my children are catered for.
It depends on the area. If it has to do with an area where I'm very good at, I really believe in myself. But an area where I'm not good at, I don't really believe in myself.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. The United Nations Children's Agency, UNICEF, is appealing for another $155 million to support 2.2 million children across South Sudan. As Mungume Dev's Rakarinj reports for VOA from Juba, the children include former child soldiers who were demobilized last year.
Tim Elwin, Chief of Communications at UNICEF South Sudan, says the money is needed to buy basic necessities, including food for more than 900,000 children displaced by the conflict who are facing malnutrition.
Malnutrition continues to be a very serious problem in South Sudan, particularly in those areas where conflict is still an issue. And there are many families and many children who continue to live in these areas who have not been reached by humanitarian assistance. So they're really an urgent priority.
UNICEF says more than 144,000 children under the age of 5 were treated for severe acute malnutrition last year alone. Erwin says UNICEF continues to work with the armies of South Sudan's two warring parties to make sure that they release some 15,000 children who are either child soldiers or support the military forces in some way. The money will also help support at least 1,800 former child soldiers who were released by the Cobra faction last year. The Auyao-led Cobra faction was part of the anti-government group South Sudan Democratic Army or Movement, which operated in the Greater Piboro area of the then Jonglei State. The group signed a peace deal with Juba in 2014. Since then, the Cobra faction has released more than 2,200 child soldiers who Erwin says are being reintegrated into their communities in the Greater Piboro area.
They often will need psychological support. They'll need help in reintegrating with their families and with their communities. They might need livelihood support.
UNICEF says it takes about $2,600 to help resettle each former child soldier. And Erwin says that includes education.
Many children have been forced out of school by the conflict. We estimate that about 400,000 children who were attending school are not attending school now because they've been displaced and they're not able to access it.
Through the USAID-sponsored Back to Learning initiative, UNICEF says it was able to provide education to close to 400,000 children, 40% of them being girls. Erwin says as aid agencies face competing priorities, they have had to strike a balance between humanitarian aid and the basic needs of survival.
There's still a great need for our emergency response, but also addressing some of the more longer-term issues, such as children's health, working to combat very preventable diseases which continue to take the lives of children, such as measles, malaria, diarrhea. Diseases like that are still claiming the lives of children in South Sudan and around the world.
Erwin says UNICEF needs money to preposition much-needed assistance in places that will be difficult to reach during the rainy season when most roads become impassable in South Sudan. For VOA News, I am Mugume, Davis Ruakarinj in Juba.
Education officials in Wau State say they are concerned about the quality of education in the area. They say while there are many private schools in the area, most of the administrators are more concerned about profit than providing quality education for South Sudanese children. Education ministry authorities say they will screen private schools to make sure they meet the required standards. Dimo Silva Aurelio has more for VOA from Wau.
Wau State education officials say private schools must focus more on improving the quality of education they provide and less on their profit margin. They say a majority of private schools operating in the area do not meet the required government standard, but still charge high school fees. Gaspar Ali Saleh, Director for Education Quality and Promotion of Wau State, says there are more than 100 private schools in the state, but many do not even have properly built classrooms.
Some schools, you will not get a tree under it. Some schools, it's just small like this. You get a school, it's a compound, let me say 20 by 20, and it is having 8 classes. You will not get a sanitation in that school, or it is a house of somebody. Let me put it like that, a house of somebody. The latrine there is only for two or the family of that house. When it is occupied by those children, so many children in that one, can they imagine how is it going to be a school?
Gabriel Gok, the State Education Ministry's Director General, agrees. He says private schools admit students beyond class capacity and that instead of helping reduce congestion in government schools, they are making things worse. Speaking in Arabic, Gok says private schools should also consider the economic status of the people in the state and avoid charging high tuition fees.
Schools operated by individuals or the community have a serious problem. We actually give them approval to open with hope that they operate according to their capacity of one or two or three classes, but they go ahead opening many classrooms.
Head teachers around the state want the area's education system reformed. For example, they say they want a review of the way primary schools' examinations are set. Private schools administrators say the big influx of students into their schools is a sign that they are providing a better quality of education than government-run schools. Emmanuel Olupot is the head teacher of Wau Junior Academy, one of the area's private schools.
The biggest problem is not about the learning environment, but the biggest problem is the overwhelming number of children who would like to benefit from the quality education that they presume private schools offer. We don't intend to actually recruit bigger numbers, but in most cases we attempted to do so because of the big demand from the community. To improve the learning environment of private schools, most especially in relation to numbers, the government should do much to improve the learning environment or the learning system of the government schools. Because government schools are co-partners to the private schools. But if the government schools are doing nothing, you realize that you can't avoid the influx of children running from government schools to private schools.
Olupot says beautiful classrooms do not necessarily mean that children will get a better education. He says local education officials should ensure that primary leaving examinations are standardized so that students who go on to secondary schools are qualified to do so.
At least the examinations should target the ability of the child, the thinking, application of knowledge, the application of theory from whatever the child has learned, and testing the key skills, reading, writing, listening, and speaking as well. But as we speak right now, you find that from P1 up to P8, children are only required to answer less than 10 questions. For the 8 years the child has been in primary, he is only required to sit for less than 10 questions after an 8 years course. It's not logical. And you, on the other part, you find that it is only testing primary 8 content. So you find that the entire system from P1 up to P7, there is nothing that is examined. It makes children relax. It kills the attitude or the ability of revision, because as soon as a child reaches P8, automatically the previous work is thrown away.
Vincent Tumoromia, who works for the Standard Secondary School, says private schools can improve the learning environment if parents show a positive attitude and can pay the required fees needed to hire qualified teachers.
It is a gradual process. It cannot be now. But with time, if the parents have got positive attitude towards their children's education, I'm very sure that South Sudan and the WAU in particular will improve as far as education is concerned. The private schools, we are doing our level best to improve the quality of our children. The quality of education should continue being the one who is expected of the parents. But we also need parents also to support the government, also to support the schools, so that we can have all together move together in a positive side.
In the former Western Baal Ghazal state, like other parts of the country, 90% of the population speaks Arabic. Many schools here are struggling to adjust the new school syllabi, which are based on English. Education officials here say since private schools have not improved the quality of education, the government will withdraw some of their licenses. For VOA, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in WAU.
And here in the United States, a South Sudanese-Canadian woman attending a college in the northern United States began her second year of law school this week, but there was one big problem. She could not enroll for classes because of her unpaid balance. She blames her problem on the falling exchange rate from Canadian to U.S. dollars. Ayan Biru describes how she found a solution.
Nyachomchek was $8,200 shy of settling her balance with Gonzaga University's law school in Spokane, Washington, for the start of the 2016 semester. The 29-year-old had to sit out the first week of classes last week and spent a good deal of that time on the computer, asking for financial help from her community. Chek says she barely made the deadline to pay her tuition.
You know, you really don't appreciate what you have until it's not there anymore. I'm really happy to be in school. And I'm also overwhelmed by the amount of support that's been coming in. People have been posting it to their pages and even to other web pages, and I'm really thankful for that.
This week, Chek surpassed her goal of raising $8,200 on the web's fundraising site, GoFundMe. Over 150 people gave Chek $8,400 in 7 months. The resettled South Sudanese refugee from Alberta, Canada, says when she began law school in 2014, things weren't as bad. Today, the Canadian dollar is worth only 71 cents in the U.S. Chek says her student loans from Canadian banks lost a lot of value this semester. She says she was able to access certain scholarships with the help of her school and emptied her own pockets to help with the tuition costs, but still came up short.
I have to double up my effort almost 1.5 times so that I can make the payment. So that's very difficult for me. And it wasn't like that when I began. When I began law school in 2014, the rate was much lower. There was only about 10 cents difference. It cost me $1.10 Canadian to buy $1 American. So now it's like really, really skyrocketed. And they also don't expect it to get any better, too, with the economy in the next year. They expect it to even go down even more.
As South Sudanese refugees living in Canada, Chek says her family has had to work hard to make a living. She says her parents worked relentlessly to provide basic food and shelter for the family, which taught her life lessons.
Money problems have always been kind of there, but they've never really stopped me. I know it might sound a little strange, but I guess growing up not always having enough, being from a country that, you know, we were always sending money back home, that kind of thing. So we were used to being strapped for cash. So I think kind of like what you said there, it gives good life lessons, and that you learn to be creative. You learn to kind of go without, and you learn to also find ways of being resourceful.
Chek says this experience has encouraged her to work even harder this semester, and she's more determined, more than ever, to become a human rights lawyer.
But I think the ultimate lesson not having a lot of resources is you learn that this too will pass, like you'll get through it as well, and it's not something that you should allow to burden yourself. So I found that with my own experience, especially this week, that the more money problems I have, the less I'm rocked by them.
Chek says she is planning to get a part-time job and save money to help pay for her third and final year of law school in the U.S. For VOA News, I'm Ayan Bior in Washington.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here is a recap of our top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John. The government-controlled Sudan news agency says Sudan has opened its border with South Sudan. A Sudanese official says it's an attempt to normalize relations between the two countries. The border between Sudan and South Sudan has been closed since 2011, when South Sudan gained its independence from Sudan. A South Sudanese analyst says the deteriorating economic situation facing both countries explains the move toward normalizing ties. Jacob Chol, head of Juba University's political science department, says opening borders will allow traders from Sudan to bring much-needed goods into South Sudan. And finally, the UN Children's Agency, UNICEF, is appealing for another $150 million to support 2.2 million children across South Sudan. The children include former child soldiers who were demobilized last year. And that's a look at today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Damme.
And that's the end of our show for the Thursday. We now leave you with the song Fiso Talaga by C.J. Oman. Fiso Talaga Uda Baba Fiso Talaga Uda Baba We have been listening to C.J. Oman with the song Fiso Talaga. I'm John Tanzai in Washington. Thanks for allowing us into your cars and homes. Remember to join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.